Welcome to Masterful Choices, where choice really matters. I'm Monique Chapman, your host. I converse with established and upcoming conscious leaders in the fields of human potential, intuition, spirituality, and metaphysics, providing empowering information for you to live a five-star balanced life. When you were born, you came to Earth with everything you needed to make life a success. Together, let's discover your pathway to greater success. To find out more about me, upcoming show guests, the classes, consultations, energy work, and holistic healings that I provide, visit my website, MoniqueChapman.com. Now, I've been told by my clients that I keep it real while providing accurate information and profound deep healings as they face the lessons they agreed to learn in this particular lifetime. Remember to like me on Facebook, follow me on Twitter, and connect with me on LinkedIn. My opt-in newsletter, Healing News, is available through my website, MoniqueChapman.com, or you can join from my Facebook page. Tonight, we've got two exciting shows. In the first hour, we have Kiefer Lozado, and he's going to talk about his latest release, Extra Life, Inc., and some timely issues that are going on in the world today. And in the second hour, we have the first Wiccan I've ever had on the show. We have Lauren Leo joining us, talking about his latest release, Dragon Flame, and the concepts of Wiccan, and we're taking calls in both hours. So if you'd like to participate in tonight's call, give me a call at 602-666-6027. Again, that's 602-666-6027. Press star 5 once you're in the system. That lets me know that you are in the room, so to speak, and raising your hand. Now, you can always hit me up in a chat room. That's open, or you can send me an InQuick from the Achieve homepage. And next week, we'll be back live with Achieve TV, so make sure that next week you tune into Achieve TV. Okay, so my first guest, Kiefer Lozado, was born and raised in Italy and moved to Israel as a teenager. Kiefer has a PhD in chemical engineering and works as a patent attorney. He lives in Omer, Israel, with his full-time partner, she wouldn't like that, Esther, and their four children. Now, Kiefer was published extensively in the professional realm. For almost 4 years, he wrote a weekly patents column in Globes, which is Israel's financial newspaper. His nonfiction book, World of Patents, was published in 2002 by Globes Press. He is the author of several short stories which focus on, but he likes to focus on full-length fiction. He's also been awarded the HWA, which is the Horror Writers Association, and the ITW, which is the International Thrillers Writer. So he's been awarded awards in both of those organizations. And he serves on the board, the editorial board of the Herald Press as an anthology editor. So welcome to Masterful Choices, Kiefer.
Hi. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, it's great to have you. Now, is it Kiefer or Kiefer?
It is Kiefer, actually.
Kiefer? Okay, Kiefer, yeah. Well, you know, here in the United States, we change names around, and me especially, I kind of get them confused from time to time, so I'll have to blend all that together. So it's so great having you, and thank you for getting up at whatever hour it is in Israel right now. I greatly appreciate it.
No problem. I'd get up at any hour for you.
Oh, thank you. Well, absolutely loved your book. It's called Extra Life, and folks, it's a novel, and it's based on some true stories, so that he won't divulge which one. Going on in the world today? Hello?
I'm sorry, I lost you for a second, yeah.
Oh, okay. We're still connected, right?
Yeah, we're connected now, yes.
Okay. And he talks about things that, you know, are real and some things that are not real. Excellent novel, quick read, very intense in the energy of a page turner. Okay. And he talks about a lot of things that you would think about when you consider the fact that fact then can be a whole lot scarier than fiction. So, Kiefer, why did you, and a lot of your novels kind of go along this line, so what made you set this up? What was it about fact being stranger or scarier than fiction that really caught your attention? I think it probably starts back with your granddad.
Yeah, well, you know, I think that writing fiction has to be, if you want to have to really have it entertaining, it has to be rooted somewhere in reality. And as you said, reality sometimes is scarier than fiction. And Extra Life, I think, is based on real events that happened, in which I was involved several years ago. But of course, the story has been written so that you cannot really relate the events to any real person. But when you look back and say, and after you read Extra Life things and try to find out which of the events are real and which probably, as a reader and which have been invented, you'll find it very difficult.
I've
heard from several people telling me, well, I'm sure this was real, and they always miss.
Yeah. Well, I'm not going to tell you what I thought, but there was so many of them. I'm like, well, maybe in that research and come up with nothing. So you did a great job in disguising, you know, the fact from the fiction, and I really appreciate that. But what people don't seem to realize these days is that governments, and it doesn't matter if it's the United States government or whatever government, governments as a whole are not really supporting people the way that we would naturally think that they are. The governments are, these big companies are not. So what did you find in your research that really turned a light bulb on in your head as to how we're truly being treated as opposed to the facade that's being thrown out there at us?
Well, you know, this is something I deal with on a regular basis. And it's regular people don't know. I mean, we live in an era where you need drugs. You need drugs. Drugs, I mean, pharmaceuticals. And you need them because you can have them. People not so many years ago were dying from things that can be prevented because there were no drugs available for them. Mm-hmm. We still have many, many illnesses that are not curable. And the thing that really got me mad was finding several cases in which people take advantage of the despair of people who know that they're going to die, they have this untreatable disease, and then they come up with magical cures that, of course, are bogus and make a lot of money, scamming investors. And those investors many times are people who have family members with the illness that they allegedly can cure with their new technology. And you see advertisements like those. I actually came across one of those in an internet channel in the U.S. not a long time ago. Someone contacted me and said, look, someone had read Extra Life thing, contacted me and said, look, can this be a real cure for that illness?
Mm-hmm.
And just by looking at the movie, watching the presentation that they give you, it has all the hallmarks of a scam. It's so easy, if you're familiar with the field, to know that this is a scam, but regular people don't know it. And I don't think that enough has been done to prevent that kind of thing.
Mm-hmm. Well, what happens when, you know, you're pronounced with a dis-ease that, you know, is really life-threatening, like cancer? I mean, you know, when you say the word cancer, people become extremely frightened. I mean, I recently had a friend call me up, and he told me that he has stage 3 lung cancer, and he hadn't smoked in 25 years, and, you know, it blew him away, and it blew me away, too, because if you look at him, he's a picture of health. So when you hear this word cancer, it seems like you'd be all of a sudden go into the role of being exploited by certain companies and even certain pharmaceutical companies.
Well, I think we must draw a very clear line and make the distinction between the scammers and the actual pharmaceutical companies. Pharmaceutical companies invest billions and billions of dollars in cancer research and other research that has to do with other life-threatening conditions. And I know that the image of pharmaceutical companies is poor in the eyes of the general public, but that normally is not really justified, because you must take into account that without pharmaceutical companies, there would not be any cure. Governments don't develop drugs. It's only the private sector that has a commercial interest into developing drugs that can spend the billions of dollars. Each single drug can cost $1 billion.
Let me cut you off a second. What about, you know, you said without the pharmaceutical companies we wouldn't have the cure for cancer, but what about herbalists and people who work holistically that put formulas together that actually do the same thing as the pharmaceutical drug? It's just not mass produced through a factory, so to speak.
And that's much more difficult, because herbal treatment can be of very different kinds. You know that some herbal treatments are very, very effective, and even pharmaceutical companies go into herbal treatments, only they don't call it that. For instance, one very potent drug for blood cancer is based on a beautiful flower called vincristine. You take this vincristine flower and you do all kinds of you know, chemical treatments to it just to get rid of the stuff that doesn't work and to concentrate what works. And that's a very, very potent drug. So the herbal you know, ability to treat certain illnesses is known, is understood. But when you go into those companies that sell you actual leaves, they don't do more research into the drug or into the ability of those herbs to treat a condition. Some of those work, others don't. And the difference between those companies and the pharmaceutical companies is that the herbal companies don't have the same methodology that you find in pharmaceutical companies to determine whether something is really working and to what extent. And so it's very difficult to know when they sell you a herbal treatment if that is really doing anything or not.
Okay. So how do you address the side effects that the pharmaceuticals give you? Like, I was watching a TV commercial last night, and they were helping, it was a drug they were marketing to help men with their testosterone. However, the laundry list of, you know, what could go wrong was so frightening, I would go with no testosterone, you know? And same thing for women with menopause, you know, the long list of things that could go wrong taking a certain medication, it makes you wonder. So how is it that, and I know you're not here in the States, you're over in Israel, right?
I'm sorry, I didn't catch that.
You're not here in the United States, you're over in Israel?
I'm in Israel, yes, right now.
Yeah, and so you may have more lax, you know, rules around certain drugs, or even get different drugs that we've been trying to get here in the United States. But how do you deal with the side effects that these drugs give you?
Well, first of all, you know, the drugs sold by large pharmaceutical companies are pretty much the same all over the world. And I do a lot of work with the U.S. companies on that, so I'm familiar with the drugs and the side effects. And it's true that many drugs have side effects. So you shouldn't be taking drugs unless you really need them. And in the if you go back to the 1970s, 1980s, much less attention was paid than to side effects. But nowadays, the FDA, the Food and Drug Administration, and other you know, regulatory bodies in other countries, they all pay a lot of attention to side effects. And in fact, some drugs can only be sold for life-threatening conditions because of the considerable side effect that they have. But if you, let's say, unless you take a drug, you're going to die in 6 months. They tell you that the drug can extend your life by a number of years, but it will have a side effect that your bones will become more brittle, so you have to watch yourself and not to put yourself into difficult conditions where you can break a bone. That's an acceptable. I mean, bone conditions and bone loss is a severe condition, but if what you have on the scale is dying or putting yourself in danger of breaking a bone, it's an easy, it's a no-brainer. You will take the drug, but you know that you have to face severe side effects.
Mm-hmm. Well, I guess sometimes it just basically comes down to, and I agree with you, most people would choose, to live the, a few years longer, but I guess it basically comes down to the will to live, number one, and number two, quality of life. Because my mom died about a year and a half ago, and she was in a nursing home. And you go there, and I mean, most of the people were older, a few younger people, but most of the people were 70 plus. And you would look at them, and they were being fed drugs around the clock, okay, to either calm them, wake them up, or fix whatever is wrong. But all they did was sit in a wheelchair and watch TV. And I guess, at some point in time, we wonder about the quality of life, and is it really worth it? Or do we go back, like, say, to the 40s and 50s, where we just lived out this natural cycle of life and then, left Earth around 60 or 70 years old and staying, instead of hanging on till we're, close to 100, but there's no quality.
I agree entirely. My father died at 97. Uh-huh. And before he died, he was taking pills to lower cholesterol. And I said, what's the point? You're 97.
Yeah.
What?
Yeah.
Let your cholesterol go wild. Who cares?
Uh-huh.
And those drugs have terrible side effects. So some of them.
Uh-huh.
And I think medicine nowadays is not what it used to be, and doctors sometimes just give you drugs because that's what the protocol says. They don't, look at you and say, oh, this guy is 97, who cares about the cholesterol? Let's not give him a drug that will give him side effects and make his quality of life worse, because it doesn't matter.
Yeah.
But they don't do that. So you see old people swallowing a huge amount of drugs that they probably don't need.
Yeah, well, I mean, I guess it's, the family wanting to keep them here or, whatever. And to a degree, I can understand that. But it was just, when I looked at it, I said, why, this is so moronic, because these people are old. They're here, most of them, with a disease that's going to take them out. I'm not saying kill them, okay, not by any stretch of the imagination. But on the other side of that, it's like, well, why, like my mom, she had diabetes. They didn't want her to have sugar. I'm like, give her whatever that she wants. Whenever she wants, just give it to her. She's 91 years old. Just let her have it. And a fight against that, and it got down to the point where they said, well, certain sugars would disagree with the medications and all of that, so I'm like, oh, just let it all go, so I guess I just get caught up in the pharmaceutical companies advertising, the slickness in which they work with doctors, whether they give them samples or kickbacks or whatever it is, to continue to poison us, and we don't realize we're being poisoned.
Yes, but I put the blame mostly on the physicians, because they are the watchdogs. It's understood that pharmaceutical companies want to advertise their drugs with doctors because there is competition, like everywhere else. That you have different pharmaceutical companies making products that have the same can be given for the same purpose, for the same illnesses. So they compete with the doctor. with other companies, and they try to convince the doctors to use my drug and not the other guy's drug. But the doctor is the watchdog. He decides that drug A is better than drug B for a certain type of patient. Mm-hmm. That's fine. But still the doctor must, you know, use some measure of, intelligence or make sense to give the drug to this patient or not.
Uh-huh.
And they automatically give so many drugs that are not needed that's what really matters. Maybe I'm not blaming the pharmaceutical industry. That's uh-huh. a business. The doctors are not a business. They're supposed to treat us.
Well, here in the States, they're a business.
Yeah, I know. They have turned into business everywhere, but that's the problem.
It is a great problem, and I honestly don't know the answer to it, because between the advertisement on TV, magazines, or wherever, even billboards, you know, telling you to ask your doctor for a certain medication, you go to the doctor and say you've hurt your thumb, and you show them your thumb, and it's five times the size it's supposed to be. They ask you, what medication do you want? I mean, I recently had surgery. The doctor asked me, well, what do you want to go under with? I'm like, I don't know. you know? And then they give you a laundry list, and then you're supposed to pick. And, you know, by the time you cipher through what can happen and all of that, I mean, you're just completely drained and you almost say no to the procedure, period. Now, you are a patent attorney. What is the importance of patents for pharmaceutical inventions? So why do we need this patent? First, explain what a patent attorney is in case someone really is not clear. And then why do we need this patent?
Well, patent attorneys are attorneys with a technological background who deal specifically in patent law. And what they do, what patent law is for, is to promote research and development by granting patent rights, which are limited, essentially 20 years from the filing of a patent application.
Mm-hmm.
The idea is, again, if I'm going to spend $1 billion to put a drug on the market, and that $1 billion is mostly, goes into research, lots and lots of tests that you have to run to satisfy the FDA with patients, to satisfy the FDA that the drug is safe and that it's effective. Now, I don't want some other guys to come along after I launch my drug, and I have to price my drug X because I need to recoup my investment,
uh-huh.
which is huge. Now, if I don't patent it, some other guy comes along, and he didn't have to spend any money on research and development, so he can price the drug much lower than I do, than I have to do to recoup my investment. And then I'm losing money. So without patents, there would not be many drugs on the market, because the pharmaceutical industry would not be able to finance the research and development of the drugs. So patents are an integral part of the system that actually allows the creation and the marketing of drugs that you need. So that's,
uh-huh.
and what a patent attorney does, essentially he works to, first of all, to file and obtain patents, and then to defend them if someone tries to attack the patent, again, to take advantage of the investment that some other company made.
Uh-huh. So what happens when, and I'm thinking Mexico in particular, and I'm not picking on Mexico, that's the only company, the country that I'm aware of, that when we can go down to Mexico and you can get drugs that you can't get here in the States, are they produced by a large pharmaceutical company and just sold to Mexico because their rules were a bit laxer, or is it a little bit of backroom dealing there?
Well, you have, in several countries that, by the way, also happens in Canada, for example.
Mm-hmm.
You have so-called generic pharmaceutical companies. The originators are called ethical pharmaceutical companies, And the genetics are the ones who didn't make the investment, didn't develop the drug. They're just piggybacking on the investment of other companies. So in those countries where you don't have effective patent protection, you have generics who simply copy the drug and sell it. Now, not all drugs are easy to copy. Some of them, particularly the ones that are based on genetic engineering, sometimes are difficult to copy. Mm-hmm. And sometimes you get drugs who are genetic copies of original drugs that are not as good as the original ones, that are much cheaper. So people buy the cheap ones. And the public, again, is not normally that the public doesn't know the difference and doesn't know the dangers of buying a specific generic that may not be up to something.
Mm-hmm.
And you have that in several countries. You have that in India, for instance. In India, you will find very small pharmaceutical companies. Sometimes it's just a family having a boiling something in the background, the backyard, with a very simple chemistry and they're cooking up generic drugs that may or may not be dangerous. That happens in China, that happens in India, all over the place.
So how can we here in the U.S. know for sure that we're getting a drug that's a generic drug, especially that has been produced with, you know, guidelines, rules, and regulations?
Well, in the U.S., you are much safer than elsewhere because the FDA really looks at every drug that goes on the market and will not, knowingly at least, allow a drug that is not safe and up to sample to be sold. But when people cross into Canada and bring back drugs, then those drugs have not been scrutinized by the FDA, and you may be buying some stuff that is not safe.
Mm-hmm. But what about when the FDA gets it wrong? I remember, you know, 20 years ago when I was going through menopause, I went to see my doctor, and he was trying to talk me into hormone replacement therapy, and I'm like, no. And he's, why not? And I said, because it's not good for you. And I said, not only that, I don't want to ingest horse urine. And he's, you know, was really pushing it. I kept saying no. Well, then years later, it came out that HRT is bad for women. So the FDA obviously got it wrong, but there was a great span of time in which all of these women took this drug that was extremely unhealthy for them. So even
that
though we
happens.
Have these regulations, it seems like maybe we shouldn't because they don't get it right. And the same thing, I don't remember the drug, the name of the drug, but when my mom was pregnant with me, and that was 60 years ago, there was a drug that would stop morning sickness, and they gave it to women at that time. And they later stopped the drug because it would cause birth defects and all other kinds of issues with the fetus. So what happens when the FDA gets it wrong? Where's the slip up? How does it fall through the cracks, so to speak?
Well, that, you know, the decisions of the FDA are only as good as the data that the FDA gets. And I know of a number of cases where the FDA got data that showed that the drug was completely safe. There was one drug against osteoporosis that I won't name, but it's very well known. And the tests that were run and given the FDA, and there were thousands of patients that took the drug, all the tests showed that the drug was effective and it was safe. And then the company got greedy and wanted to sell the same drug for a different indication because, you know, drugs can be used sometimes for more than one indication.
Mm-hmm.
And so to do that, to get approval from the FDA to sell the drug for a different indication, you need to provide data that was generated for the separate indication, even though the drug is already on the market and has been for a number of years for a first indication.
Mm-hmm.
So when they ran those tests and the dosage was different in the way that the drug was administered was different. Then they found that he caused lots of problems, heart disease, and things like that. And then the drug was discontinued for use for all indications. But until the moment that they ran those tests, nobody knew. They all thought that the drug was completely safe. Now, what the FDA does, it tells you when you come and say, okay, I have this either a new drug or an old drug that I want to sell for a different indication. The FDA will tell you, okay, to approve it, I want you to do all this research and to test the drug on so many patients and so on. And give me the data, I will analyze the data and find out if, based on my understanding of the data, if this is something that I can approve or not. So the FDA doesn't know everything. They only know what the data that they have requested and that they have been given.
Okay.
And, yeah.
Well, why does the FDA sometimes fast-track drugs? You know, because sometimes they say it takes, you know, 3 to 5 years to push a drug through, and other times it's pushed through in, like, you know, 12 to 18 months. So how can they fast-track it? I mean, why aren't all drugs either pushed through in 18 months or they all take 3 to 5 years?
Whether a drug can be fast-tracked or not depends on several, you know, different considerations. One is this a drug that is used to treat or potentially used to treat a life-threatening illness? If it's the you know, recreation drug, then it's a different story. If it's a drug that has many alternative products on the market that do the same thing, then it may be less important to get it through fast. But if it's a new drug for treating an illness that is not curable so far, then you want to fast track it.
Okay.
And again, you can't. I mean, if you need to run tests with patients that take time to reach a conclusion, then that's the time it will take. Sometimes you need to give a drug for a certain period of time and watch for side effects, and that's something you cannot hurry.
Well, lately in the news, we've heard a lot about this. I think it's MUR, M-U-R virus that's going around. Have you heard about that, and what's your thoughts?
Well, viruses are a very special area, and you have a number of companies who specialize in generating drugs against viruses. Again, some species are so complex and they change so fast that it's very difficult to find a vaccine against them or even drugs that can treat the effects of the virus. This is really scary because the viruses that change very, very quickly are very difficult to treat or to prevent or to find vaccines for. Again, many viruses that we thought would destroy humanity have been curbed, like HIV, for instance. I remember when HIV first came to the attention of the public, we thought, well, this is going to be a big, big problem, and the numbers are going to be huge. And it turned out not to be. I mean, it's bad, but it doesn't spread that fast.
Yeah, now, but I mean, back in the 90s, it was like running rampant and it's almost a shame in a sense that people have kind of lost their awareness about it because people, are so laid back about it now. I mean, I even had a client who came to me who was not HIV positive. He was AIDS positive, but he was taking a pill and I don't remember the name of the pill, but the pill made his, blood go down to negligible. So he felt that he didn't have AIDS, and he's out, you know, having fun with all types of women and no protection whatsoever, and, of course, not telling them. And I guess that the semen count and the blood count are way different, and the semen count's a lot higher. So if the semen is, you know, injected into something and gets, you know, into an open area and causes a lot of damage where the blood itself just may not. And so, yeah. I mean, it's like we've come this far, and it's great because we're saving lives, and there's so many young people and old people, too, who are having an opportunity to keep going with their lives, but they seem, I don't know, like they don't care. They don't have an active knowing of what they have and what they're doing.
Yes, well, the war on viruses is mostly won by prevention. What happened in the 90s is that people were not aware that having unprotected sex would what was a real life-threatening danger.
Mm-hmm.
But nowadays, I think even young people understand that, and that's one of the reasons why HIV is not spreading that fast, as fast as it did in the 90s.
Mm-hmm.
And the drugs, the cocktails, so-called cocktails that they give you for HIV, also have become more effective. But the best way to deal with it is to keep safe and not to be infected. And that's the same with other viruses. And at some point, we had an outburst of SARS in the East. And again, if you quarantine people and you don't let the virus spread, that's the best way to treat it. Otherwise, if you're not aware of the dangers of this virus and how and by what mechanism the virus infects people, and we were not that well aware back in the 80s and 90s, but a lot of studies gone into it, and I think we are much safer nowadays than we were even a couple of decades ago.
Mm-hmm. Now, I know you can't name names, but based on your research that you have done, is there one pharmaceutical company worldwide that is more dangerous than others as far as cooking the books, so to speak, that they present to the FDA? I know the FDA is worldwide, but... Again, I'm trying to give you leeway without saying the name of the company, if there is one.
I don't think that serious pharmaceutical companies cook the books, as you say, as a strategy. And I think people in the pharmaceutical industry understand that they are under very, very close scrutiny, and anything you do wrong may cause huge issues with the company. A company that would be found cooking the books and selling a dangerous drug may well be shut down and go bust. So I don't think that anything is done on purpose. But sometimes, and although the rules are very, very rigorous about how pharmaceutical research is done, sometimes people may be sloppy or make mistakes, and then those mistakes are found, as you said before, years down the road.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes it's just we didn't do enough research. That was what we were required to do by the rules, and we played by the rules. But the rules didn't tell us to do something that... had we been told to do it, we would have found that the drug was dangerous, and we only know this 5-10 years down the line.
Mm-hmm.
But I really don't think that any major pharmaceutical company would do something on purpose, would cook the books. Now, when you go to small generic companies, that might be the case, but on a minor scale, because generic companies don't create new drugs.
Right.
They may, you know... They may do something not exactly by the book when they copy an existing drug, and that may be an issue. That may create problems. But I know a number of cases where that happened.
Uh-huh.
But it's within the boundaries of, you know, sloppiness, not something done on purpose to put the dangerous drug on the market. That definitely is not the case.
Okay. Okay. Now, in your you also talk about high-tech scams in your book, and I'm going to give you a chance to talk about the book, but I want to ask you a couple other questions first. How can we avoid high-tech scams? First of all, what are they? How can we recognize it, and how can we avoid it?
Well, high-tech scams normally are very easy to spot if you are aware of that they exist and how you should look at them. They normally come from small entities and stuff. No large company will engage in scams.
Mm-hmm.
That we see in many, many cases, small startup companies that come to you with the promise of, or the hope at least, not promise, it's difficult to promise anything in you know, biological life, but with the hope that a certain treatment will do wonders. Now, the problem is, how do I know if this is just it's not a scam, it's just a startup company that genuinely thinks that they have a chance to develop a treatment, and it's a high risk. Everything you develop in high tech, including pharmaceutical and biological high tech projects, everything is high risk. So you must be aware that if you invest in a startup company, unless in a few cases what they do is clearly going to succeed or has a very high chance of success, but in most cases you're investing money in a high risk thing. Now, I'm not adverse to putting money into a high risk thing, because I know, you know, the risk is proportional to the gain.
Mm-hmm.
You are at a high risk to losing your money, but if the project succeeds, then you're going to make a pile.
Right.
And that's a risk that you can, I mean, that's your decision.
Mm-hmm.
The problem is that it's very difficult to tell those startup companies from scams unless you're aware that they exist. Now, I've, by the way, I've put on my blog, you will find a couple of posts where I give very clear guidelines how to find out if what you do, what is being proposed to you is a scam or not. You will see, for instance, that people, and as patent attorneys, see them very often, because I have people coming to me and say, look, I've been offered this and that, and could you please take a look and tell me if it's legitimate?
Mm-hmm.
Now, if someone comes to you and tells you, look, I have developed a certain drug made from whatever, herbs or, I don't know, things, and that drug is good against cancer, headache, menopause, and things like that, and it treats a large number of illnesses, then that's the first hallmark of a scam. Serious pharmaceutical developments focus on a very, very specific problem, illness, condition.
Mm-hmm.
But you have a number of those, and it's really interesting to see how scammers from all over the place, from different places, and even different disciplines, they you know, use the same arguments and the same things to try to entice you into putting your money into the scam. So when you've seen many of those, you recognize them, and I really recommend to anybody who's planning to put money into whatever scheme to go and take a look and see the recommendations on my blog, because that will help you make up your mind if it's something you want to invest in or not.
Okay, why don't you give us the address for your blog, and your website, and the address for the blog?
It's, that's difficult. That's my name. It's www.kfirluzatto. It's kfirluzatto.com.
Okay.
But anyone looking for Kfir and scam, we'll find it long, I guess.
Okay. Okay, now, your book, your 10th book, you've written 9 books in this book, Extra Life. What caused you to write it? And give us an overview. Sell it so that people just run out and buy it tonight. It's a good book, folks. It's a good novel.
Yeah, thanks. Well, again, I write books, and I write fiction, but I like to write fiction that is rooted in reality, because that's what makes the reader, feel that this is something real, that is relevant to him. So it has to be both entertaining and has to give you some, I wouldn't say information, but it has to let you take away something from the book.
Mm-hmm.
And I was involved in this terrible pharmaceutical scam many, many years ago, where a doctor managed to fool people into believing that he had found a cure for cancer.
Mm-hmm.
And I was examining this so-called invention. I was much younger than now, and it took me a little longer to find out that this was a scam, but eventually I figured it out.
Mm-hmm.
But by the time I figured it out, the treatment was in the press, and this guy who was in Israel started getting phone calls from Australia, from the U.S., from all over the place, from people who had found out about this miraculous cure. People were terminally ill and so on. That was very tragic. And at some point I thought, okay, this is something that we must, I must alert the general public against this kind of scams. But how do you do it? I mean, if you I put up a blog, as I did, and you yell scam, 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 and some people read it, but it's not. No, we tend, as people, we tend not to read about troubling things unless we have to.
Mm-hmm.
And so I thought, how do I bring this to the general public so that they, at least know that this happens and it sits somewhere in the back of their mind. And because I write fiction, the solution was very clear to me. Let's write a thriller that is entertaining and gives the information. So when you finish the book, you have been entertained, as you're entitled to when you pay a few dollars to read the book, but you also have this information in the back of your mind, and if you come across the scam, then Extra Life Inc. should pop up in your mind and say, oh, well, let's see, this may be a scam, let's look into it a little more carefully than they would have done without reading the book.
Mm-hmm.
So I got resolved both ends of it. Enjoyed reading the book, writing the book, and also to spread the word about pharmaceutical scams and how you should be careful about them.
Yeah, and you have written, as I said, this book is your 10th book. You've written many books, and folks, you can find them all when you go to kfirluzzato.com. That's kfirluzzato.com, and click on the books link, and you will find all the books that he's written. I haven't read the other ones, but you know what really looks really juicy to me is his lighter side. So I think that'll be the next. It's a short story, but that will be the next book of his that I read. It's a very telling tale. Again, you can't figure out what's what, but you can kind of read between the lines, and it allows you to think. It opens your eyes, and I truly appreciate you, Kfir, for bringing this type of information to us in a way that we can understand it, wrap our minds around it, and then take some action. You know, our own action, whatever that is. So, when is your next book coming out?
Well, it's planned for the end of this year or the beginning of the next. Depends on how busy I will be.
Mm-hmm.
But it's something I'm having, particularly great fun writing right now, because it's again, it's a thriller, but it ties in with a biblical charade, and I think it's going to be fun. But by the way, for you, I would recommend reading Crossing the Meadow, which is a book about crossing over, which has some interesting insight into the life on the other side.
Okay.
I think you might enjoy that.
I think I will. So thank you very much for the referral on that one. Folks, we've been speaking with Kafir Lozotto. He's the author of Extra Life, Inc., if you really want to know what's going on behind the scenes so that you can pay attention and be aware on another level. This is a book for you to read, and you can go to his website, and it's Kafir Luzzatto, KFIRLUZZATTO.com. Kafir, thanks so much for your time. I really appreciate it.
Thank you very much for having me. That was great fun. Thanks.
Yeah, I had a wonderful time with you, and, you know, contact me again, okay?
I will, definitely.
Okay, thank you very much. Bye-bye.
Thanks, Monique. Bye-bye.
Okay. Bye-bye. And thank you to the audience for hanging in here with me this hour. Stay with me next hour, because we have Lauren Leo coming up. He's the author of Dragon Flame. He's a psychic. He's also well-practiced in Wicca. And he's going to give us some tips on how to create things in our lives and set the right energy so that the creation actually works. So stay with me as we continue to make some masterful choices. I'll be right back in a few minutes.
AchieveRadio.com, the positive side of broadcasting.
Do you ever feel stuck, like you can't move forward? Or does it feel like your circumstances are so different that no one can understand or help you? Do you need guidance to achieve your financial, romantic, career, or health aspirations? Call me. I can help. I am Monique Chapman, and for over 30 years, I have assisted thousands of clients in gaining clarity and achieving their goals. Are you overwhelmed and looking for relief? Do you yearn to gain or reestablish your deep spiritual connection? Call me at 888-240-6057 and set the appointment that will change the course of your life to the positive. With so much going on today, everyone needs a resource they can count on to guide them through tough times. I am your resource. Call me now at 888-240-6057 and let's get started. Why suffer in silence when you can have the relief you are desperately seeking? Love yourself enough to make an investment in yourself and call me today at 888-240-6057.